The Daily Connect Podcast.
It's Tuesday, it's the 11th of December, and this is the Daily Connect Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading. Coming up, we are going to be continuing an ongoing conversation that we've been having on this programme about guide dog refusals. Sam Little and Laura Fatchie will be sharing their experiences, and blind broadcaster Sean Dilly will be also here to outline some of the legalities around guide dog refusals as well. We'll also be checking in with Claire Potter. She has an app for us to talk about. She's been using it to learn yoga, and she'll be telling us all about the Simply Yoga app shortly. But first, we learn about our Society of the Week this week, which is Sightline. Peter Hoy is here to tell us more.
So I'm Pete, and I'm the service manager at Sightline. Sightline was a charity that was formed in 2002, and we've been running a helpline since then. And that helpline has been open in the evenings from 6 till 10. We kept it open at that time because we wanted it to be a service that people could access when other services were closed. And the reason for that is that when people have a diagnosis, it's important that they're actually able to talk to somebody, and our helpline call handlers can talk through and help people understand some of the issues that they're facing and provide information and emotional support. So if people just need to get things off their chest or think them through, then they call the helpline. We wouldn't say it was a counselling service because that's a specialist form of intervention that requires years of training. But we are a peer-based service. All of the people answering the phone at Sightline have gone through sight loss and understand. What we aim to do is allow people the space to express what's going on when they've been diagnosed or if something's happened. Half the time, people have their own solutions. But the experience of sight loss is so overwhelming that it's hard for people to think it through. We're here for people, and you know, we're dedicated to helping people improve their own situation. The befriending service is a new thing, but what we realised is that the problem of isolation in society is a huge thing, and it can lead people to have really poor health and really just not live life to the full. So what we did is we got some money from the Big Lottery. Thank you, Big Lottery. That has enabled us to set up this service whereby people can get a call once a week, usually, with a trained volunteer who either has eyesight problems themselves or somebody in their family has, or they know about sight loss through work. But the main thing is our volunteers are good at conversations, they're able to listen, and they can share interests and things in common with people. We've got about 12 volunteers at the moment, and we're recruiting more. But we've actually set this up so it's a very easy service to people to volunteer for because they do it from their own home. Obviously, people get some training on how to be a befriender, but after that, the calls, once they're agreed through a befriending plan, are automated. So as a volunteer, your phone rings at, say, 7:30 to call, say, Anne in Accrington. And it calls you up and says, hello, this is Sightline. Press any key to start the outgoing call. We did that because we wanted to avoid our volunteers, who are mostly people with sight loss, wanted to avoid them calling the wrong numbers and being worried about that. So it's a very carefully designed service. We'd like people to think about our service as one that helps people along the road. As people encounter disabilities, what can often happen is that their life changes, social contact reduces. We're looking to try and help people develop the confidence to turn that back and start to find new ways of socializing and engaging with society, getting out there and doing new things, to explore opportunities. The thing is also, befrienders and the person who's befriended will develop an ongoing relationship, a one of trust, so that there isn't anything pushy about the way the service works, and it is very much led by the person who is receiving the service. But the intention is always to try and get some progress so that in the end people don't need us. That's what we'd really like, people to form their own friendships and overcome their own isolation in their own part of the world. The best way to either volunteer or obtain the service is to call our helpline on 0800 587 2252. The helpline is open from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week. If you use email, the best thing to do is email us at info@sightline.org.uk and a member of staff will get back to you. It's as simple as that.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, today on The Daily Connect, we discussed guide dog refusals, and we heard from Laura Fatchy and Sam Little. We'll hear that conversation in a second. But first, let's hear from blind broadcaster Sean Dilley, who summarises for us the laws and the regulations around guide dogs and refusals.
Though you can't hear it, around me is power personified. Just 200-300 yards away from the House of Commons and the Lords Chamber, where the Equality Act 2010 was passed, it rolled all sorts of legislation into one, including the old Disability Discrimination Act. Now, there's a bit of an incongruity between the fact that if I am refused a taxi or a minicab here in Westminster, that's a criminal offence, and around the country. If I'm refused access to a restaurant, it's not a criminal offence. Yep, believe it or not, the law places a duty on businesses to make a reasonable adjustment, and it doesn't specifically say that a guide dog has to be allowed. That's just the way the courts generally tend to swing that way, because they need to make a reasonable adjustment in reality to allow a guide or assistance dog in most cases. So that's the legals. Obviously, if you get refused a cab or a taxi, you can go to your council, they'll help deal with it. Or Transport for London if it's in London, in the capital. But if you get refused to a restaurant, then really you are on your own. You know, Guide Dogs is a fantastic charity. It's life-changing. I'm a very proud volunteer with Guide Dogs, but there's only so much the charity can do there as well, because the reality is that there are just so many access refusals, and engagement officers up and down the country, up and down the United Kingdom, are dealing with these things all the time. So in reality, it's all about empowerment and us dealing with that, which, you know, to a degree means that we can end up banging our head off a brick wall trying to deal with something that is deeply upsetting, that the law is not entirely clear cut upon, even though it should be, and something that would cost us fortunes to deal with. And I'm aware I'm recording this, I can hear the frustration in my own voice. I've probably had about 100 access refusals in my 19 years of guide dog ownership. Though the interesting thing was, I went into a local branch of a fast food restaurant at King's Cross the other day, and a security guard told me, no dogs. I said, it's a guide dog. He said, well, I'm just doing my job here. I said, well, do you understand? I can't see it's a guide dog. Yeah, I know, but the rule here is no dogs. I don't advocate this course of action to anybody, but I just said, look, fella, I don't want to fall out with you personally. I think I'm bigger than you. I'm not going. And the customers, they leapt into my defence and they said, look, this is ridiculous. And I was just saying to them, look, have a heart, forget what the law says. And I honestly don't think that people understand how it feels, unless you've had it, to be discriminated against in this way. And then the danger is that even raising these things makes people seem as if you're the troublemaker. And that's what I'd like to see end. I'd like to see a very clear system of accountability, where if you are refused, it could be looked at under a law that's clear cut, unlike at the moment, which is as clear as mud.
So that gets our conversation underway on the subject of guide dog refusals into taxis, into public buildings, into shops, restaurants, whatever. With me now to discuss this in more detail is Laura Fatchy and Sam Little. Both of you have experienced similar experiences in being refused entry. I'm going to start with you, Laura. You experienced this getting off a plane in Edinburgh, I believe, trying to get a taxi.
Yeah, flying up from Manchester, and we went to the taxi company office to pick up the taxi, and fortunately, and we were in a really good environment where the employers of the taxi driver who refused to take me, they were that shocked and disgusted that they suspended him on the spot, and there was so many people who stepped in and said, look, we'll take you, I'll take you in my taxi, and you know, the outrage on my behalf was so kind of encouraging, and actually it could have been a much more upsetting experience. I have in the past been refused access to restaurants, and it was a lot more upsetting that time than this most recent refusal.
Okay, Sam, let me bring you in. Tell me about your experience of access refusals. You've in fact made a video about it.
Yeah, so I'm very new to the world of guide dogs. I've only had my guide dog Ziggy for a year, and he's my first one. And just very recently, I experienced my third taxi refusal in less in space of less than a year. So I decided to use my platform as a contributor for BBC The Social, to make a video about it, because I just felt like, it was ridiculous in this day and age that this was still happening. And the response is amazing. As Laura says, I think the majority of people are usually enraged and disgusted at this type of behaviour. And I too myself has had the support of fellow taxi drivers who have experienced, witnessed the situation and have jumped in to help. At the end of the day, it's still happening. But I do feel like the more awareness that's being raised with the help of social media and people like ourselves talking about how it makes us feel and the impact it actually has on us, will hopefully make a huge difference. But like Laura says, unless you're in the right environment where people are witness to what's going on or can help you deal with the situation, it's really, really difficult to prove and move forward.
Sean Dilley is a broadcaster. Sam, you work in this world as well. You work for the BBC, as you say, in the social side of things. Also, Laura, you are a very successful Paralympian. I mean, we're not all shrinking violets here, are we? And dealing with this must be rather frustrating, Laura, especially for you. I mean, this was your first experience of Edinburgh, I believe.
Oh, no, not my first experience.
Oh, well, that's good. That's what I read. Okay.
What I found, I was very shocked by it in Edinburgh, because generally when I have been there, it is an extremely guide dog friendly city, and I've never encountered anything like any sort of refusal problems before. But I think social media is great for us, because we do use a lot of social media, and making people aware of what's going on is has. The response is great from social media, and the more I do wonder whether the more it happens to people who have access to social media, the more we can raise awareness, and hopefully, I mean, it isn't nice for us to have to experience it. It does make you feel a little bit, it hurts, to be perfectly frank. It does hurt to be refused, but also I think we have a duty as people who have a bit more power over social media to bring people's attention to it. And yeah.
Is that the answer, Sam? Is it about getting us, more awareness of this on social media, almost to the point of shaming people who do this, or shaming companies that let this happen?
Yes and no. I mean, I kind of have my own personal policy of, if I encounter a situation like this, I try and deal with it locally, because I think a lot of the time it's just due to lack of education and lack of awareness. So, for example, I got refused from a local supermarket, and the security guard kept asking me to leave with Ziggy. But I honestly think it was down to the fact that he had been told no dogs, was very new in his job at a security guard, and it was almost like he'd never seen a guide dog before. But I honestly think it was because nobody had, when he'd been trained for his job, nobody had said, well, whilst we don't allow dogs in our stores, we do allow assistant dogs, and educated them on the different types of dogs that are allowed in supermarkets by law in the UK. But there does come a point where it's happening so often, and you just feel like, well, the only way to do it is to shout out to the world, this has happened to me, this is not good enough. And, while shaming doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do, at the end of the day, they should be ashamed, because not only are they breaking the law, but they're discriminating our disability against us. They're preventing us from leading independent lives. And they should be ashamed of that. But I don't think it's down to shame. It's also the legal side of it and company policy side of it. They have to have procedures in place. So, for example, the taxi driver who refused Laura, he was suspended on the spot. So there needs to be a zero tolerance policy towards it. Can't just be like, oh, we're really sorry, we'll make sure it won't happen again. They need to know that it's wrong, it's illegal, and they cannot do that, especially when it comes to taxis.
Okay, stay with us because we're going to continue this conversation. I also want to ask you from my point of view, because I am at this point applying for a guide dog, and this is something which concerns me. I want to get your views on this in just a moment. Stay right there. Sam Little and Laura Facci talking about guide dog refusals here on The Daily Connect.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, you want to get into yoga? You want to try something new this year? Well, there is an app for that, thankfully, and it's accessible as well to blind people. Here's Claire Potter to tell us about Simply Yoga.
Hi everyone, my name's Claire, and today I'd like to demonstrate an app called Simply Yoga. It's available for iOS on the App Store, and it is for iPhones, iPads, and iPod Touch devices. I would say that this app is by far the most accessible one for people with low vision, very low vision, or no vision at all, and want to do things like yoga, but they can't afford to go out to classes, so they want really clear, nice audio instructions rather than having to look at the screen to know how to do the workouts. So I downloaded this app about a year ago. There are two versions. There's a free version, which gives you just one difficulty of workouts. You just have three ready-made workouts. The paid version is $4.99. I purchased the paid version, and I would say it is the best purchase you could make, because having to pay for an assistant, an actual assistant, to go just to one class would cost you a lot more. So, like I said, this is $4.99 from the App Store, and that gives you the option to have the workouts from the free version, plus you have some level 2 workouts, so you have three more that are slightly more difficult. Because after a bit you can get quite bored of just doing the same workouts over and over again, and once you get bored of those workouts in level 2, in that version you also have the option to create your own workouts, so you can make them even shorter or even longer than what you already have. For example, you might want just poses where you just sitting on the floor, or you might just want standing poses, or just ones where you're laying down on the floor, or you might want just a mixture. So you get all those things in the paid version. So like I said, it is really worth it. $4.99, it is just a one-off price, and you have all those options for, well, forever really. I'll demonstrate this app on my iPad mini 4. I'm using it with VoiceOver. Like I said, it is very, very accessible. Just the one thing to note, once you select your workout and you press the start button, you just double tap where it says start workout, VoiceOver will speak a little bit once the instructions start, but you won't miss too much. It won't be anything too major that will affect your workout too much. So let's go into the app. It is on the home screen, so once I find it, I just double tap to go into the app.
Spotify, Simply Yoga. Double tap to open.
So you just double tap.
Selected. Simply Yoga. 20 minutes. Button. 1 of 3.
So for the predefined workouts, we have 20 minutes.
40 minutes.
40 minutes.
2 of 3. 60 minutes. Button.
And 60
3
minutes.
3 of 3.
So 20, 40 and 60, these are all pre-made workouts. By default, it is level 1, so next to the 60 minutes, if we swipe right one more time.
Selected. 1, button, 1 of 3.
So we have the 1 and the 2.
2, button,
like I said,
2
all
of
I'm,
3.
All I'm doing, as soon as I go into the app, I'm just swiping to the right. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing anything else in particular right now. So the 1 and the 2 are your two difficulty levels of the pre-made workouts. And then next to that one, because we're in the paid version, we have
hammer and pick, button, 3 of 3.
Now, I could have named that a little bit better, but once you get your head around it, it is actually the option to make your own workouts. Also, if you've already made a workout yourself, a customised one, that is where you'd go. You'd double tap and you select the one that you've created already, or if you haven't created one, you would select the create new workout option. And you would select your poses from there. Next to that, if we swipe right one more time.
Start workout button pad. Button.
So we've selected our workout, and now we will just double tap this button. We also have
:=button.
Now once we start our workout, this is where you would double tap to see how far you're into it and what pose you're doing. It would also show at the bottom of the screen, so it just depends what you want to do really, what you find more comfortable doing. Next to that we have
:more apps. button.
This is actually the more apps button, so any other apps which have been done by that developer, they would be in that section. And we also have
:info. button.
We have info, which is just telling you about the app, so if you double tap that you will read a little bit about it.
:gear. button.
So gear is actually the settings for the app, so it's where you can customise the app to suit your needs and put in some details so it's more personalised to you. So I'll demonstrate a quick workout just so you can hear how clear those audio instructions are. Like I said, VoiceOver will speak a little bit once I press the start workout button, so once I find it I double tap it, but it will speak for too long. You will hear it.
:more:start workout button pad button.
So a double tap.
:start workout button dimmed button.
This is a basic standing pose. It is a place to start from and return to. Stand with feet together. Feel your abdominals pull in tight and relax your shoulders down and back. Close your eyes and gently rock forward to the toes and back into the heels, coming to rest in the space between. Softly open your eyes and gaze forward. Feel the length in the spine. Keep the arms relaxed down by the sides of your body. Press down firmly through the feet, bringing energy to your legs. Feel calm and grounded as you breathe deeply in this tall, quiet pose.
Back pause pad.
So I've just paused it so you could hear those instructions. Like I said, they are really, really good. Like I said, I really like this app. I don't think there's another app like this, especially for yoga, because a lot of them, you have to look at the screen and you have to rely on the pictures of, you might have little like stick men showing you the poses, which is not really accessible for people like myself who have no vision, and anyone else out there who is not really able to see the screen that well. So like I said, I really like this app. The $4.99 version is really, really worth it. It is absolutely amazing. And I don't really purchase that many apps, but this one is one where I didn't really hesitate because I knew that it would be quite good. If you're not ready to make the purchase just yet, you can always get the free version. Like I said, it is on the App Store, so if you just search for Simply Yoga, it will come up. And you will get the two versions, the free version and the paid version. So you can always start off with the free version, get yourself familiarised with that. And then once you're used to that and you get fed up with all the workouts that are already in there because they're just that boring, you can get the free version, the paid version, sorry, and make your own workouts or try some slightly harder workouts. But it is really worth it. You do have the ocean sound in the background while the instructions are talking, but you can also turn that off, so if you just want instructions, that's fine. I personally quite like that because it is just a little bit more fun rather than just listening to a voice all the time. You know, you have the sound of the ocean, it just makes time go a little bit faster. So yeah, if you want to get yourself into yoga and get yourself a little bit more active and more flexible, then go for this app. I really hope you find this useful.
And don't forget, you can head over to the RNIB Tech Talk feed for lots more. The podcast is available now. You can listen to lots of other features and, of course, our weekly show as well, which is available Tuesdays from 1 p.m. right here on RNIB Connect Radio. And, of course, on podcast, RNIB Tech Talk is where you'll find it. Wherever you found this podcast, you'll find that one.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
We're discussing guide dog refusals on the Daily Connect today. If you want to share your thoughts on it, then please do radio@rnib.org.uk or give me a call here in the studio. Have your say on 0345 602 0025. Laura Facci, MBE, and Sam Little are with me today discussing this. Just before we sort of stopped there discussing this, we were talking about this whole naming and shaming thing around companies. Laura, I wanted to get your view on this. Do you think that it's time that we stopped, as blind people anyway, being quiet about this and start shouting a bit more?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm on my second guide dog now, and so I've been using guide dog for 12 years now, and my whole family, I've grown up with guide dogs around, so my mum's on to her sixth, and my two brothers have guide dogs as well, so we've got a lot of experience, and I don't remember my mum being refused quite so much when I was younger, and I don't know if it was just we didn't go out as much or what, but it seems to be getting worse rather than better. And I just feel that we need to start making people accountable for it rather than being quiet and letting it get on. Because I have done that in the past. I've just, you know, I've argued my case on the spot, but then I've never really done anything about it if it's not got anywhere in the past. And I'm fed up of it, to be honest. I'm just a bit fed up of being made to feel different, being made to, you know, not be able to just go anywhere I want with my guide dog, because that's the whole point of a guide dog. It's that independence. And I think people don't quite realise that they're not an accessory. They're not just a dog. They're there because we need them. We rely on them, and they allow us to live a normal life.
I completely agree with Laura. I mean, as I said, I'm really new to this. And, you know, the first time it happened to me, I think I was in such a shock that it actually happened, because I'd heard all about taxi refusals. But in my naivety, I didn't actually think it would happen to me. And then the second time, I was lucky that I had friends around me who, you know, took photos and gave of evidence and stuff. And then the third time, I had other taxi drivers around me. But it's just, you know, like Laura said, it's frustrating, because the whole point of having a guide dog is to allow you to live independently. So to constantly come up against these hurdles all the time, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, we're in the 21st century, we're in an age of awareness and, you know, more and more equality, and it just shouldn't be something that we have to deal with. So I do think it's something that we need to shout out a bit more. I think, you know, I know myself, I always try and keep the peace, and you just want to make things as easy as possible. You don't want to get in the way, because, you know, you already feel like you're a bit of a hindrance. But I think we as ourselves, the people with disabilities and using guide dogs, we need to change that mindset. You have to think, no, we have a right to be here with our guide dogs and to use these services. And, you know, we're not going to put up with it anymore. I think you know, like Sean Dilley said earlier, you know, guide dogs are a charity, an amazing charity, and they can only do so much. So I think it's up to the rest of us to really step up and show our support and show our strength and show people why it's so important that we don't have to deal with these obstacles. So we can be independent and show that people can lead independent lives despite having a disability.
I suppose I'm coming at this from a slightly different angle, because I've just applied for a guide dog, so I'm just at that early stage in this process. And I guess it's something which I'm worried about. I am worried about it. It's something that's in my mind at this point. If, and obviously, Sam, from your point of view, you are fairly new to this. Was it in your mind? And is it something that would have, and would it now put you off continuing to have a guide dog?
I think if I'd had a better insight as to the types of situations when I was applying for it, I definitely would have thought twice, because when you're talking to people about getting a guide dog, it's not usually about those kind of things. It's about the personal benefit that a guide dog can bring to you and the independence that a guide dog can bring to you. And when you're learning how to use a guide dog, yes, the guide dog mobility instructor does go over these things with you, but like I said, until it actually happens to you, it doesn't really sink in, like, the effects that can have. But I have to say, all the issues I have with having a guide dog, despite the many benefits it brings, is to do with the public awareness. It's to do with being refused taxis. It's to do with people coming up to touch my dog despite all the paraphernalia that my dog is wearing. And I honestly feel if those things didn't happen, then my guide dog experience would be completely positive. But I would also say to you, someone thinking about having a guide dog, that it does change your life. And you shouldn't let things like that stop you from having one, because hopefully the more people see people using a guide dog and it be, you know, a part of everyday life, the less that these type of scenarios will happen.
I find that really interesting. Laura, where do you stand on this?
I would never be put off having a guide dog. The benefit I find from having the dog, you know, the dog by my side on a daily basis is incredible. And as part of what I do, sometimes when I go away to race, I don't get to take my guide dog with me because I'm abroad. And if I'm out of Europe, I don't really like to take them long haul. So I'll leave them at home. And I miss having that independence at, you know, on my left arm all the time. And I just would, nothing would put me off having them because of the quality of life that they give me. I can understand why people could potentially be put off, but I hate to think that people, you know, ignorant people are winning. They're not. We need to just be more forceful with education, I think, and make people aware around us of what we expect from the public to treat the guide dogs. I couldn't imagine life without one.
Well, I think it's a very interesting conversation, and I look forward to people's views on this. If you have one, then, and I'm sure you will, then email us in radio@rnib.org.uk or call 0345 602 0025 or tweet us using the hashtag TheDailyConnect. Sam Little and Laura Fatchie, and also our contributor, Sean Dilley, thank you so much for being here.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Just one more thing from us today, and that is the story of Frankie, who was a prison officer but lost her sight. And after losing her vision, she changed tact in terms of her career, but also some of the things that were important to her. And she became an RNIB campaigner. Here's Frankie's story.
I lost my sight a couple of years ago off the back of a stroke. So I currently have no sight in my right eye at all and no central vision in my left. I've got diabetic retinopathy and glaucoma in the left eye as well. But with regards to my sight loss, it is actually a recent thing. I had 20/20 vision up until a couple of years ago till I actually had the stroke. So a bit of a big change for me. I attended an event at St James's Park Football Stadium in Newcastle where there were various different sight services and groups and sort of businesses to do with sight loss. So there was a lot of technology groups there. There was obviously charities there and things. And that's where I first met Mike Hall and Francesca DiGiorgio from the RNIB. And they sort of had a chat with me and explained all about sort of RNIB Connect and campaigning and what their sort of main aims and goals were. And it just sounded really interesting. I had a lot of kind of ideas. And also I was ready to sort of hear other people's ideas and things as to what the charity and things were all about. Again, with it being a relatively new thing for me, I wasn't really aware of any of the work that the RNIB did or anything like that. My previous job, I worked as a prison officer, which obviously made me come into contact with various different people from various different backgrounds, a lot of quite challenging situations at some time. But also I think the main skill you need to do that kind of job is to be a good communicator. So I consider myself as a good listener. I can adapt to what people are saying, and I'm quite good at taking things on board and also giving my opinion as to how things can maybe improve or how people can look at things in maybe a different way. So I think my experience as a prison officer definitely helps with regards to connecting campaigning, because obviously you get people who've been campaigning things for years who might not have seen things from a, quote, younger perspective, or they might have sort of been doing the same sort of thing and have the same sort of goals for a long time. So I think it helps being a campaigner and being able to listen and communicate and also get your opinions and points across in a relatively simple manner, really. Try and shadow as much as I can various different events and having meetings and things like that. Not so much full-on campaigning myself, but just see how others do it, really. I was fortunate enough to attend the meeting in Newcastle that they had to conclude and confirm the fact that the council has agreed to the street charter and all the suggestions that the various charities have put forward to make Newcastle more accessible. So that was really positive in the fact that to see that the end, when all the hard work had come together and see what kind of a result it had made really and how it had changed obviously people's lives around Newcastle was fantastic. So I've just tried to sort of apply things as much as I can locally, obviously with me being from Durham. So I sort of got together with a few of the connectors in Durham and just tried to apply some of those things and see how we could change things locally as well as a region, really. Getting strength in numbers with regards to campaigning is the main thing. I think the bigger group and the more diverse group you can get together is definitely a massive positive thing. I would definitely recommend and encourage younger people to come forward and try and get their opinions across and points across and just how sight loss affects them, because one thing I've noticed is that the RNIB sort of committee that I'm on and the meetings we have tend to be sort of the older generation. And they've obviously been working towards the same targets and goals for quite a while. And I think especially now with technology and things and sight loss affects the younger generation, maybe slightly differently than the older generation. So I think definitely the more younger people we can get on board, the better. And just get taken part in things like the Blue Badge campaign that I took part in. Just getting your opinions across about how things actually affect people personally as opposed to in like a wide spectrum, really, because I think it's really important. There's so many different types of sight loss and it affects so many people in different ways. Again, just the more diverse and the more opinions and voices we can get heard is a really positive thing.
And that is Frankie. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for downloading. We are back on the Daily Connect tomorrow from 10 a.m. Join me for that if you can. And don't forget the podcast, as always, right here after 5 p.m.
The Daily Connect podcast.